Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. In this episode, Brian Strauss joins me to talk about the U.S. men's national team, our interviews with general manager Ernie Stewart and interim coach Dave Sarakin, and our take on the first week of the Nations Leagues in UEFA and CONCACAF. A quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. It helps people find us. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Brian, how are you, man?
Not much going on here. It's rainy. Just hanging out, sitting on my couch.
It's rainy here in New York as well. It has been for the last couple of days. I am coming to you from a new location today. I joined a WeWork facility two doors down from where I live in New York, and I'm saving an hour of my commute not having to go down and back to the Sports Illustrated office. I feel like I'm contributing to businesses in my neighborhood.
I thought actually on occasion about getting in my car and driving the 4.5 hours to the Sports Illustrated office just because...
Only a 9-hour commute.
Well, because A, I never talk to other human beings. You're the first person I've talked to in 3 days. And second, because there's all the pretzels and M&Ms.
True.
I mean, you could take like a big thermos. You could take a bathtub and fill it with sourdough pretzel nibs and M&Ms and just eat yourself to death. And so there are occasions where you know, I'm sitting here alone in the dark and I haven't talked to anyone in days and I've eaten nothing but stale pita bread and I've thought about making this drive. But you have awesome stuff right on your block. You've got that deli we went to that one time.
Yeah.
You've got pizza place you don't like. You've got the donut place around the corner we went to. So that's a cool place to hang out. And it's also, like we were saying before, I mean, it's like your World Cup kind of redux, right? It's like you're gonna be more efficient and there's gonna be more ass kicking now because you are cutting out extraneous distractions.
I'm hyper-local. I don't mess around in traffic these days. Let's talk soccer, man. U.S. men's national team 0, Brazil 2.
Brazil covered men's national team. The Brazil men's U.S. men's national team, Brazil men's national team.
I could do that. I understand your point. Feel free to go on your rant about the Fox broadcaster saying U.S. men's national team all the time.
Every time. And the Kentucky men's basketball team is bringing it up the floor. And the Louisville men's basketball team just committed a foul. Sorry.
Let me say this, Brian, is that don't you think it's a good thing that women's soccer, maybe more than in most other countries, is seen as equal with the men's team in terms of how it's treated in the U.S.? And that's why we have to differentiate.
Wait, do you have to differentiate every single time you mention the team?
No.
Okay. And is it not clear from watching the broadcast that we're watching men? And this is the same as my Team USA rant. How come it's Team USA, but it's not Team China? How come it's not Team Duke or Team Chicago?
So the U.S. beat Team Brazil.
Yes!
Or sorry, lost to Team Brazil.
Testify.
I'm all confused. 2-0 on Friday night before a somewhat sparse crowd at MetLife Stadium. 32,000 some, I think, was the announced crowd.
I want to talk about that too.
The last time these two teams played in the same stadium, I think, was in 2010, right after the World Cup, and that was like 77,000. Do you want to get into the discussion about ticket pricing right now? Or do you want to wait?
I don't care.
Well, let's get into it a second, because clearly ticket pricing had an impact here, and U.S. soccer is trying to make as much money as possible. And I talked to people last week here in New York who were saying it's like $100.
Yeah.
Is that worth it for a friendly when you're granted you're seeing Neymar and Coutinho and Firmino and those guys and the U.S., but they weren't exactly playing at World Cup level speed, it seemed like.
I mean, is it worth it? That's a subjective question, right? I mean, 32,000 people thought it was worth it, and getting 32,000 people to come to something is impressive. That's 32,000 people. And I'm not defending U.S. soccer's ticketing prices. I'm just saying that, I mean, it was sparse because they played it in a 70,000-seat stadium. They still had a crowd of 32,000. But you make a good point when you can compare it to the 2010 game, which also, if I recall, was the first game after the World Cup run in South Africa.
Yes.
So you had the Donovan goal, the Algeria win, the drama of the overtime loss to Ghana. You had some good feelings about the team. So there was a far different mood around the national team that was more likely to pry people from their money than there is right now. So I think that's a factor too. So people want, and this is not a, again, not a defense, but people want the U.S. to develop, right? They want U.S. soccer to develop, and they probably agree that playing better competition is one of the ways you develop, right? Having Tyler Adams and Weston McKinney go up against Brazil, go up against Casemiro, is better for them than going up against, you know, Guatemala's B team or whoever would be cheaper to bring. So to bring Brazil and to bring Brazil's A team to a friendly costs millions of dollars.
Correct.
You know, the appearance fee alone is millions of dollars. And then you've got to pay the logistics and the flights and the hotels and the transport and the training. I mean, it's millions of dollars that they're laying out. So everything people want U.S. soccer to do, right, from bringing in the best opponents to funding coaching education, to funding player scholarships, to doing all the things, costs millions of dollars. So if U.S. soccer turns around and says, okay, if you want us to play Brazil, that's great. And I'm not saying this is happening. This is just sort of a thought experiment. But if you want us to play Brazil and you think that'll make our team better, that's great. But it's going to cost you $60 to get in the door because it's not Jamaica. Then that's what it costs. At the same time, there is this surplus, right? This $110 million, right? Whatever it is that came out of the financials.
Right.
Surplus that's kind of sitting out there. Should some of that be used to pay for Brazil to come? So tickets can be $25 instead of $50. That's politics. I mean, that's a debate that can be had. But the upshot of all of this is that all the things people want U.S. soccer to do costs a shit ton of money. And so they have obviously done the math and decided that the way to make some of that money back is through higher prices. There's that slide from their AGM, not their AGM, the board meeting, forgive me, the board meeting that I posted in December. They met at around MLS Cup or the day after MLS Cup in Toronto, and they posted a slide about attendance and ticket prices and revenue from the World Cup qualifying cycles dating back to 1998. And in 1998, the average World Cup qualifier ticket price was $19.81, and the total revenue from the cycle was $2.4 million. Mm-hmm. For this cycle, 2018, the average ticket price was $97.
Wow.
And the total revenue was $17.6 million from $2.4 million in 20 years earlier. So what is that, seven times, eight times? So the math checks out on some level. And then, of course, people argue that you're trying that's a short-term fix, right? The long-term fix is bringing fans in, bringing kids into the stadium, having them intoxicated by the atmosphere, figuring out ways to fill those seats, and then you create lifelong fans, lifelong customers. That makes a lot of sense because seeing the stadium half full was not an impressive sight. It's a really, really complicated issue. That's my only point.
Yeah, I understand you got to make money. You got to pay for Brazil to come. I also think that you are really limiting it to the people who can afford this type of thing, which isn't always
the new fan you're trying to bring in. I just feel like there's this trend right now, whether it's that or with the pay packages for watching soccer behind a paywall, that I don't think we're far along enough in the advancement of soccer in America that you only want to cater to the hardcore fan who's already a fan, who's willing to pay that price. And you're basically saying to people who are just getting into it or might get into it down the road, you're going to have to pay money for this. Well, maybe they won't, you know? I don't know. I think it's a growing issue.
But certainly exposing, certainly the inability or the complications it creates, exposing new fans to the game, bringing new fans to the game, which the sport still needs, introducing fans to the new players on the national team, all that sort of stuff. At the same time, had they played at a 40,000 seat stadium or a 30,000, so I don't know what that would have been, it would have looked far different. So it's complex. And then again, there's the issue of the surplus. There's the issue of where that money is. I guess it's invested. What that money should be spent on. You know, I had an interesting conversation. Some conversations this week I'll wind up writing about sort of this issue of how that money, you know, should be targeted, where that money comes from, whose responsibility it is to pay for coaching license, coaching education, player scholarships, and if people want the federation to be the one that funds that stuff, the federation's going to need a lot more money than it has.
By the way, we're recording this on Monday morning, coming out Tuesday morning, ahead of Tuesday night's U.S. men's national team friendly against Mexico's men's national team.
Correct.
So we aren't going to be discussing that, but let's talk a little bit about the game itself against Brazil. 11th minute goal by Roberto Firmino off a very nice cross from Douglas Costa right after he smoked Anthony Robinson. And also Firmino wide open because Miazga lost him. But then, you know, I still feel like at that point you're starting to say to yourself, wow, this could be 5-0, which is kind of how I felt going into the France friendly. Wow, they could get smacked, this friendly right before the World Cup. Ends up being 1-1 in France. This ends up being 2-0. The second goal, I thought a dubious penalty on Will Trapp right before halftime. But it didn't get ugly in this game. And, you know, the U.S. fought. They created a couple of chances, mostly off set pieces in the second half. And I guess you could say this was another pebble of experience in this stretch of games for a group of young players.
Yeah, I mean, for a team featuring 11 starters, none of whom would start for the opposition, right?
I mean, right,
if you were to pick a best 11 from that starting 11, every single one of them would have been wearing yellow. For that team to keep it to 2-0 and for that team to not lose their shit, and again, I mean, I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that, you know, Dave Sarokin has wanted to build a sort of a competitive foundation and something, you know, stuff about approach and commitment, and chemistry. And yeah, I like the way you describe it, a pebble in the foundation. They stayed in this game. They've been competitive in every single one of the games they've been in. They've had a reason to play and a reason to fight, you know, up until the 90th minute. And that matters when you're building something long-term. Maybe it doesn't please you if you paid $100 to sit there that night, but it's something the players will walk away from. You know, hopefully, you know, Anthony Robinson won't take that angle of attack on a player like Douglas Costa again, right? So there's something that he can take away from it. Obviously not having Pulisic, not having any sort of creative or possession sort of establishing force in the middle of the field has been a problem. You know, we've seen this triangle of Will Trapp, Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams sort of develop in center midfield. It's obviously lacking a player with Pulisic's technical ability. It could really use that, but absent that, they've gone with what they've had and they've been competitive. And, you know, that's kind of all you can ask for at this point from an interim coach and a really young team.
Yeah, Pulisic has barely played for the national team in the last year. I found it interesting this week, Ivis Galarza with a story citing sources inside U.S. soccer, that there's frustration on their part about how little Pulisic has been around and available over the past year. I don't think you can complain at all about him being injured. He missed a game with Dortmund heading into this window. I mean, the guy's hurt. But I do think overall, from my own talking with some U.S. soccer people after or this past week, there is some frustration there. And I don't know if it's tied to what we heard from Jeff Cameron at one point in the New York Times a few months ago, saying there was a divide between the European-based U.S. players and the domestic-based U.S. players. It is very clear from anyone who observes things that Pulisic has gravitated on the national team to guys like Cameron and some of the European guys in terms of who he sort of hangs out with and when he's with the national team, or at least in the past.
Yeah, but he's also tight with McKennie, and McKennie couldn't be more committed, more easy to get along with. He's been great so far. So
true.
I don't know. I mean, I think Pulisic, it's one of those deals where, you know, he'll have played 89 minutes for the national team over the course of a calendar year. And I tweeted that out, and of course I got a ton of, you know, it doesn't matter, it's just friendlies, you don't know anything about soccer, you know, all that bullshit. But you're trying to build something. You're trying to build, again, the foundation for something. You're trying to build relationships. You're trying to establish a new culture. And Sarakin said one of the reasons he hasn't called in some of the veteran leaders is because he wants to give the young players time to establish their own culture and to establish their own leadership. And so Pulisic has missed that. And maybe you want to grunt out on Twitter that doesn't matter, and that's fine. That's your opinion. But you know, if you're starting something from scratch and you're getting this slow burn developing, I can see why you might want your best player involved. I think the interesting thing is that each of Pulisic's absences in a vacuum is understandable, right?
Right.
They didn't need to call him back for the Portugal game a month after Trinidad, you know, get him time with Dortmund. He's had a long season. He's injured. I mean, each one of them by itself in isolation is understandable. But now in total, in sum, we have 89 minutes over a calendar year. And that's not nearly enough. That doesn't happen anywhere in the world that a player of his stature, misses so much time with the national team. So regardless of when it is in the cycle. So, what was I going to say? I think another issue, obviously we don't know who Ivis spoke to, but Sarakin was on the record with me before the games, not only saying, you know, that we'd like to have Christian Moore, but that his attitude wasn't great when he was in with Bolivia. And,
right.
And Sarakin went on the record saying that, you know, we needed more from him. Yes, he'd had a long season. Yes, he'd been tired. You know, yes, you know, that's the reason we agreed to kind of let him go after the Bolivia game, but during the time he was here for that game, there wasn't enough there from him. And Sarakin was very pointed about that. So it may not be only frustration with his absence, but obviously in the one time he was in, he didn't make the best of impressions.
Right. Speaking of Sarakin, you had a long interview with him, wrote about it last week on SI.com, which I suggest everyone reads. Like being around myself, the team last week, I feel like Sarakin has done a solid job in a really tough situation for this long. Someone suggested that maybe he might have a shot at the Olympic team job to me last week. Do you think that's possible?
Sure. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of all you can say at this point, but
yeah. I wouldn't you know, set fire to shit if that happened. I mean, that's okay.
But I also...
He is essentially coaching the Olympic team now.
This is true.
I mean, he's got kids on his team who can't buy a beer. So, I mean, yeah.
But Ernie Stewart sat down with reporters for a roundtable conversation the day before the game.
Were you the only one in the roundtable who was not writing for The Athletic?
The Athletic?
Are we it? Are we? We're it, right? Like we're the only ones who have not.
No, there was actually a group of probably about 15 to 18 writers, mostly at that roundtable. All but one of them were dudes. Rachel Bachman, the only exception from the Washington or Wall Street Journal, which I'm still troubled by. I think we need more women in our business. But anyway, I digress. And Ernie Stewart spoke, you know, probably for about 45 minutes, took questions about his job as the general manager. He took over August 1st, and he's in charge of hiring, choosing who's going to be the next head coach. And I certainly understand from his perspective why he hasn't made that decision yet. He just started August 1st. I do have an issue with how U.S. soccer dragged its feet in getting the position filled. I think they could have filled it a lot sooner. We talked about this last week.
Yeah, it also seems strange to me that part of his interview wouldn't have been like, I guess, and this is why I didn't get the job. I'm not for the interview. But if I was interviewing for that job, I would have said, here's who I'm calling on day one. Like, I would have done research on my own, and I would have said, or, you know, on week one, here are the five guys that I want to talk to right off the bat. And just in case they move on, just in case we lose them to you know, Paraguay or Iran or whomever, right? I mean, and I'm not saying Osorio should have been it. I probably would vote thumbs down on Osorio if given the option. But the point is that this delay, for lack of a better word, may have cost them the opportunity at a couple of candidates. And so, yeah, it has taken a long time.
I just find it frustrating. And, you know, I think part of the reason for the delay in hiring a GM was because U.S. soccer, as they first defined it, didn't give the position any power. And so the first several people they approached with MLS GM jobs were like, why would I leave my MLS job for this one? And didn't take it.
Well, and does Stewart... And I guess we're still not sure what kind of power Stewart has, right? I mean, I'm still not certain whether Stewart picks someone and says, this is the guy, and that's enough to ensure that his choice gets the job.
Yes, it is. Let me answer that question for you.
Okay.
Yes. So,
because there's like contract negotiation. I mean, Stewart doesn't control the money, right? I mean, or has he been given a budget to spend? I mean, I just... Go ahead.
There's a lot that's unanswered still, and Stewart was vague and on several aspects of that last week. But there were a few things to take out of it from what he said. Mm-hmm. Put it this way. He recommends, after this process, a head coach, and the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors has to approve it. If they don't approve it, then he might as well just resign, right?
Right.
Like, why? What's the point?
Right.
So, I mean, 99.999% chance that the head coach, Ernie Stewart, recommends, the board of directors approves.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the financial issues, and that was, I guess, more. Well, I mean, what if he recommends a coach that costs $5 million a year, and Dan Flynn or the financial people are just like, no effing way, not happening.
No, I get it, and I also think this is part of the issue, and why other people turn down the GM job is because you don't have full control of the budget. Of what you're doing. You don't even have control over the youth side, including hiring the Olympic coach, the under-23 coach. But I do think Ernie Stewart clearly wants to be heavily involved on a day-to-day basis and not just before he makes the hire of the head coach. Because one thing we talked about was how he's going to be living in Chicago. The national team coaches from now on are going to be required to live in Chicago, which is interesting to me. I think it might limit the ability to hire some superstar coaches. But Stewart's like, look, I want to be seeing these guys on a very regular basis and be a big part of the day-to-day with the
guys
head coach and his
guys
staff.
Guys wouldn't want to live in Chicago?
Chicago's a nice city, but
Chicago's awesome.
Jurgen Klinsmann never would have wanted to live in Chicago. He would have refused.
Well, maybe this rule should have been in place back then, huh?
But
it's not like Chicago is like Nunavut, you know? I mean, it's great.
In the winter it is. But I guess what I would say is it was interesting to me how Stewart sees the job. Like, he's hardcore, man. I'm a little worried about how hardcore he is. His wife and kids moved back to Holland from Philadelphia instead of joining him in Chicago. And so he's just going to be grinding away, it sounds like. And he also talked about I was the one who asked him the question, is it a requirement that the head coach speak English? And he said yes, and was not compromising an inch on that. So I assume that means Jose Pekerman is not a candidate for the job.
I would think the way Jose Pekerman has gone out of the World Cups he's coached in should make him not a candidate for the job. But
also potentially Tata Martino, who, while he can speak some English, prefers not to.
Yeah, I mean, well, it doesn't have to be like speak English is a pretty broad, like, it, like, you don't have to be Walt Whitman or Shakespeare, you know? I mean, I would hope that Ernie Stewart would accept the guy who like Tata, right? Who's learning, who's taking a stab, who will do his best. That should be, I mean, you need to be able to communicate in this job. I agree with that. I mean, there has to be some ability to communicate in English, but again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be the poet laureate. There were a couple things, and I don't have the quotes in front of me, but there were a couple things that I saw him say that were just slightly concerning. They were really buzzwordy, and I would have thought that someone of Stewart's, I was just surprised to hear that come from him. I mean, this is off the top of my head, and I don't have it in front of me, but when he was speaking with Fox during the game, and maybe he said it in your roundtable as well, he said things like, what I'm really looking forward for is a coach who adopts American principles of play, we're aggressive, we're in your face. Just like stuff that made no sense and meant nothing, and that reminded me of Jurgen again. And I'm just like, I don't know what any of this means. And you know, it just concerned me that it was veneer and spin and nonsense. And I would hope he's saying that for the benefit of the cameras, and that's not really like, when he's going to do a coaching interview, he's not going to say, but are you going to play in your face soccer, you know, to like a guy with like a UEFA A license. Anyway, that was just a little weird and made me squirm a little bit.
Well, actually, he did say those exact same things in the roundtable.
What does that mean, man?
So, okay, here's how I took it was that, and this is interesting because I don't think Greg Berhalter is necessarily known for playing a pressing style, right?
And so that means pressing.
He wouldn't go into any more detail, which was frustratingly vague. And he even said, I've spent the last month talking to 12 to 20 people, stakeholders in the U.S. soccer landscape, and, you know, getting their sense of things. And I've also put that with my thoughts about what I'm looking for in terms of principles of play. And yes, he used the words aggressive and in your face as describing American style.
Now, what is unaggressive soccer look like? I would say Ernie, like, we just watched the World Cup. Which of the teams at the World, Saudi Arabia? I'm just trying to figure out what. It's word salad.
I guess what I would say, Brian, is if you're being a bit more charitable, it's not sitting back. Okay. I sort of took it. And part of the problem was Stewart was like, I'm not going to go into more detail on this right now because I want to talk about it with our coach in detail first. I'm like, oh, so why are we doing this? And
did France sit back on its way to winning the World Cup easily?
They did counter a bit.
So was that sitting back?
My takeaway was that this could mean pressing. And that actually adds a real interesting wrinkle to me because so many people think Greg Berhalter is going to get this job. But if Ernie Stewart's actually looking for a coach whose teams press, that more accurately describes Jesse Marsh. That more accurately describes Peter Vermees. Right?
It does.
So,
but Greg also may be coaching what he has in Columbus, although I guess he's been there long enough to also, he's also the one who picks what he has. He's buying the ingredients and cooking the meal. But we haven't seen Greg, you know, with a completely different cast of players, with a different sort of club, with a different sort of, salary budget to mess around with. It's not like they're bringing in, you know, Javinkos and whatnot. But yes, agreed 100%. And if that's what Ernie's word salad means, that I want a coach who's going to press, you know, and Jurgen Klopp's not available, then yeah, then go after – but then just say that. Just say we have extraordinarily fit athletes, and since we don't have right now the sort of the technical acumen throughout the player pool to play like, you know, to play some tiki-taka, we're going to try to, you know, win the ball higher up the field because we're not going to be building out of the back anytime soon. And that's our plan, and that's what I'm going to be looking for. Then that's great. Then that's a philosophy, and say that. In your face sounds like an energy drink commercial.
It sounds like the season motto for MLS, like back in 1998 or something.
Oh, yeah, DC United. Well, God, every year DC United would have, you know, like the media guide would say, like, it takes more on it. Oh, God. Or One Nation, One Team slogan, one... I think was it Michael LaHood? I think over the weekend he was playing with Sierra Leone. I may have all of this wrong, but anyway, like, had a team photo and said, and then the team photo said like one team, one nation. I'm like, wait a second, that applies to every national team, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Trying to think if there's anything else U.S. men's national team related to talk about. Here's a question for you. The UEFA Nations League started this past week, and there's a CONCACAF Nations League that has just started as well, and the U.S. will get involved exactly a year from now. And it does take some time. Google UEFA Nations League or CONCACAF Nations League to actually see what it means. But I kind of like it so far in Europe when you see teams of relative similar strengths playing each other in a competitive game where it's not six substitutions and these are official games and there's like groups of three and they're going to do home and home. And, you know, Spain 2, England 1, that was a good game. That felt more intense than a friendly. Same thing for France 2, Netherlands 1.
Yeah, that was a good game. I watched some of that. If you haven't seen the stadium-wide serenade to N'Golo Kanté that occurred after,
that was great.
You must watch this. Go find it on Twitter. I like it too. And I'm sort of like, one of the things I keep seeing in stories written about it is like, oh man, you need to be Stephen Hawking to figure that. No, you don't. It's really not.
Yeah, you really don't.
You really don't. It's not that complicated at all. And what's cool about it, the only potential downside is, except for, you know, in addition to countries like us, who now miss out on potential games in Europe because they have these games scheduled, although we won't in November, obviously, is that I can see how if you are, you know, with a competitive aspect, sometimes you want those games where you can bring in new players, right? I mean, it may make it harder to introduce new blood into a national team because there's now less margin for error. If you do poorly in this Nations League, you get relegated. And all of a sudden, instead of your friendlies being against France and Germany, your friendlies are against Finland and Armenia, right? And you're not gonna make nearly as much money on those. So I can see why a coach now might be struggling a bit more with, okay, now's the time to throw this 19-year-old on the field and see how he does. But otherwise, yeah, it's cool. I enjoyed watching the games. It's cool that there's a competitive aspect to it. It's neat that each of the four nations leagues in Europe gets a bid to the European Championship. So that means that Finland or Armenia or a team like that will be able to use the Nations League as a way to qualify for the Euro, which is great. It opens it up a little bit. I just don't think any of those elements exist in CONCACAF. We don't have the depth of quality. We don't have the diversity in teams. You know, you and I and everyone, all of us, fans, media, you know, we've all seen how many U.S. Trinidad games and how many U.S. Honduras games and how many U.S., you know, Jamaica, pick your team. It's just over and over and over. And so I guess it remains to be seen what kind of benefit or excitement or intrigue there will be for the U.S., Mexico, Costa Rica in this competition. But I can see why it's helpful for Canada scored 8 goals over the weekend against some island. Canada hasn't scored 8 goals in a decade, you know? Like, that had to feel really good. Like, Canada must have just been cathartic. Because, right, I mean, they, every couple Gold Cups, they'll show up and take 2 shots, right? So like they scored 8 goals in one game. So they must be pumped. So it's good for the smaller countries, for the up and coming countries. I can see why France and Germany and Spain thought, you know, I'm sure the Spanish players, except for Sergio Ramos, liked going to Wembley. But I don't know what good it's going to do us in Mexico and stuff like that.
So I'll respond with a couple things. One, did you see our man Inspector Pavard get like cleated across the neck?
Yeah, by someone on Germany. I can't remember who.
Rudiger.
Rudiger, thank you. Yeah, yeah, that was. Yeah, that's why they wouldn't let us wear spikes in when we were coming up.
I just wanted to say Inspector Pavard, but then in terms of responding to your point about CONCACAF Nations League, I don't know, man. Like when the U.S. gets involved a year from now, there's going to be 4 Nations League games, right? I think something like that. Or I'm pretty sure that's the case. 3 team groups.
There are some groups of 3. There are some leagues. There are some tiers that have groups of 3, and there are some tiers that have groups of 4.
Right. But
I think ours will have, I'm double checking right now. Ours will be groups of 3. And so we're going to have,
some friendlies still.
Yeah.
You know, and so you can still have some high profile friendlies. Then you have the Nations League games. And I still think if you have a game at Jamaica or at Honduras that matters, I think that there's value in that. It's not just a waste of time. In fact, there may be more value than that friendly against Brazil the other night.
I mean, certainly if, yeah, I can see how that would be the case. I mean, let's say you get to a Caribbean island and the field is wet. Instead of going into hysterics and sort of making jokes about it, and then fielding maybe the same 11 on the wet, heavy field that you did 4 days earlier, maybe that experience will teach you, you know, we should take this a bit more seriously. We should maybe put some fresh legs on the field. And we learn, you know, we should maybe not play an empty midfield, you know, in a game that's going to stress long and high passes because of the turf, the condition of the field. And we learned that from our Nations League game in Martinique. Maybe. So, yeah, maybe.
Oh, boy.
I'll never get over it.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable. I get it. Yeah. All right, man. Let's call it a day. Good to talk to you. Let's do it again next week.
All right. I'm glad you didn't get ousted from your WeWork cocoon.
The window's fogged up, though. It's really hot in here. I'm serious. It's really hot. I'm sweating.
We're back to being in immense physical discomfort while recording podcasts. Oh, I missed that.
See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do. And check out the 30-minute Planet Football video show hosted by me and Luis Miguel Echegaray on SITV. That's available on SI.TV, Amazon Networks, and FuboTV. See you next time.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use. Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save